broadcasting from inside the Jim Butler Ballroom of the beautiful Mitzvah Hotel, KFAB and Twyla's Pack and Tag Shop is proud to present Drive Time Tonopah with your host, Faye and Brenda.
I'm Faye.
And I'm Brenda Boo.
And thanks for joining us once again on Drive Time Tonopah.
You know, Faye, it hasn't been that long since we recorded last, but I feel like we needed to come back to the Jim Butler studio and set some things straight.
Yes, we had some reaction to our last episode, Drive Time Tonopah number 13, which was pretty intense, I would say.
Yeah, and it inspired a few people, which we always appreciate, to make comments on Twitter. And some of those people were Curtis, one of the Game Night guys.
Thank you, Curtis. He quite apparently enjoyed our discussion.
He made the comment that some of the things that you had said
hit home for him, I believe.
Yeah. Scotty, the little Aussie battler, called us controversial.
Ah, good.
Joey Boohecker said that he loved us together. He loved our conversation. And then Anthony Andoran, he listens to a lot of podcasts, and when he listens through them on Get Glue, and he'll make a little comment on Twitter, and he said the name of our episode, and then he said, "This is getting uncomfortable."
Yes.
But that wasn't our intention, was it?
No, not really, but I could see how people could think that it was uncomfortable. It was a little bit intense. But we're going to talk about that a little bit more as we get into the show. And you're going to hear a few new segments here on Drive Time Tonopah on this episode as well. Some new things we're working up.
Faye, wouldn't you say that Drive Time Tonopah is really about letting a different side of your personality come out, and then I'll just continue to cut my veins and bleed out for the world? This is nothing new for me. It's a new forum, a new venue for you. So.
Yes, you do tend to take me to places where I would rather keep tamped down and suppressed like any good psychologically demented person should.
But I think people are really enjoying getting to know you better.
I think they're enjoying the both of us together on Drive Time Tonopah. So, but thank you. Thank you for that comment.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you wanted to clarify about that conversation?
It's just that my sense is that you want more from the relationship, and I'm absolutely willing to give you more, but I don't know how that is to manifest itself. I don't exactly know what you need. I need to know the mechanical steps.
Oh, okay.
for making you feel as though you have my undivided attention and love, I guess.
Okay.
I'm not sure I know how to convey that or give that to you.
Well, I have to say, I don't know if it's been because we had that conversation or if my hormones are settling down, but I have to tell you, Faye, I've been feeling a lot more relaxed and confident about our relationship.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I do too, I think. We had a pretty intense conversation.
I was talking to the neighbors across the street, and I had mentioned this to you privately, but I want to share this with our listeners, that she was saying how she felt opening up and having quarrels and misunderstandings with a lover was easier because somehow the sexual dynamics could make you overlook stuff and you get past it. And she said that having a close friend, having a misunderstanding, was harder. And I feel like maybe that was part of our problem. You were feeling more vulnerable than you cared to with me, and your instincts were to put your walls up.
Right.
And I'm hoping you feel that through our conversation, we spend quite a bit of time together now. I mean, I have come to your home and slept in your bed and used your facilities.
Ooh. And
not your bed. The spare bed. The spare bed. Yeah, it was the three of us. Me and Mr. Anderson and you.
Every guest that comes to to see the Faye driver, can sleep in my bed and use my facilities.
Well, I had to pay for every use of the toilet, but, you know, I understood. Water's, you know, even though you live in the Pacific Northwest, where it's raining constantly, water isn't cheap. That's so right. I understood that. But, you know, some of our listeners got quite uncomfortable listening to our conversation. And
we got a lot of reaction from that episode. There's no doubt about it. Even though it was somewhat of a more heated episode, I don't really regret. I don't think I regret any of the content of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised. Some people, I think, really enjoyed it, and some people were uncomfortable by it. But I don't feel uncomfortable. I was a little bit uncomfortable when it first came out, but having listened to it a couple of times, I stand by everything we said. I do take issue with being referred to as a sex-crazed maniac, however. I am not a sex-crazed maniac.
You say so. If you take issue with that, that's fine. I just...
I would just like to say, I don't think about sex all the time. It's only when I have nothing else to think about do I think about sex.
But do you remember on an early Drive Time Chinopa, we talked about prostitutes, and one of the things you said was, I think I would be a really good sex worker. Do you remember he saying that?
I agree to this day.
Well, that might have been a stepping off point where I thought, Faye is a little more preoccupied with sex than I am.
Well, I think that goes without saying.
Well, yeah. You're a boy.
Right.
Boys. Whatever. What do you think about having such personal conversations presented as a podcast? Would you listen in, if this wasn't our show, if you piped up Big Fatty one day and he had a very personal conversation, would you like that?
Yeah, definitely. This is one of the most engaging things about this world of podcasting is people will want to share the most tender parts of their life with you, I think, and fears and worries and concerns. And I think that is the most interesting podcasting. And I think part of the reason that we love that kind of deeply visceral type of thing, that eavesdropping in on someone else's life, is because I think we're all afraid of the same things. And when you hear someone else saying that they feel vulnerable about this or that, I think it helps us understand in ourselves how frail and fragile we really are.
Mm-hmm. Drive Time Chinopa is way different from anything that you've put out on Pink Wheel Nuts. For the most part, there's a couple that were very tender, and you revealed some information about your private life that you hadn't before, but this is a real departure for you.
You know, it's a little difficult. I always go into these bloody Drive Time Chinopa recordings kicking and screaming sort of inside because, oh, what now? What am I going to have to admit to now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A part of me wants to remain... to maintain the persona of the Faye driver, and then there's a part of me that wants to say, you know, I am a real person too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know why you make me do this.
Why do you let me do it? I mean, you are the type of person that if you don't want to do something, you're not afraid to say, all right, I'm shutting this down. This is over. How come you haven't done that? I mean, you must like it on some level.
Oh, obviously I do. It's because I'm a narcissist, I admit. I think I want people to hear how creepy I am.
How creepy you are.
Well, you know, how... it's an interesting character study.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might learn something about myself, too. Because usually these things just rattle around in your own head.
Right.
And someone makes you put them into some sort of logical sense and order and say them out, you kind of realize, I'm learning this about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what what makes podcasting so interesting to me. Even on the Pink Wheel Nuts podcast, which is a little less, you know, forthcoming, but you know, there's a persona that's portrayed on that show, which is an aspect of my life that I'm still sort of discovering, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing I always find curious is that you make it sound like you have this secret life. Like, you, if no, when nobody's around, you're doing these nefarious things that you can't possibly let anybody know. And I've spent several days in a row with you day after day after day, and I always think, what's this wild life that he's so afraid to show anybody? He seems pretty ordinary. So what are you hiding, Faye Driver? What's
ordinary?
Going
on? How dare you? That's the great thing, is that the recording button gets turned off. If I recorded 24 hours of my life, ugh. Well, one, it would be pretty boring. I'm doing whatever a man might want to do.
See, that's you make it sound like you've got... You can't talk like that to a person like me because my imagination just goes crazy. You know, when you say things that are pretty innocent, like those... last time we talked, you said, that's not for your ears. You just... Something you said, and I was just like... What is he hiding? You see how I imagine what strangers are like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness me. I couldn't possibly be doing half the things you think I'm doing.
Okay.
But I'm doing one half of them.
Oh.
Anyway, we'll move off of this topic. And we'll just delve into the psyche, not necessarily into the day-to-day goings-on of the Faye Driver. Okay, so where are we going to start tonight then?
Since we talked last time so much about your attitudes about relationships, crossing these barriers, keep people at arm's length, you had said that part of the reason you had these kind of feelings and notions about life was because you had a very structured attitude about work and how your work life has rubbed off onto your personal life.
Right.
Right? Did I say that in any more convoluted way? Is it understandable how I said it?
Yeah, well, I think the issue that you and I sort of butt heads on is I have this structure and I have what you refer to as all these rules.
You do. You have so many rules.
Well, it's not like they're written down on paper or anything.
But they're in your head.
Yeah, so I conduct my life according to these, quote, rules, unquote. And you don't quite understand this philosophy, perhaps.
I don't.
So I feel a need to defend myself.
Okay, please. Give us an overview of a day in the life of Faye and Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, so I've been doing the same types of jobs for most of my life. Most recently, for the last 13 years or so, I have been working as a dispatcher. And in this environment, I am required to make very quick decisions, and you're often asked to supply information as quickly as you can, or get this as quickly as you can, or when you're talking on the phone to someone about something's on fire, you know, you don't sit and chat about it, and, well, come on now, sit down, we'll have a cup of tea, you can tell me what's on fire, and, you know, describe the color, and what does it smell like, and when was the last time you saw a fire like this? You know, that's not how we operate. We need to know very quickly. We have these three questions that we ask in my line of business. What's on fire? Where is it? Keep it going until we get there. So those are the three questions we ask whenever you call for the fire department.
Keep it going till we get there. What's that about? Is that a joke?
It's a joke, yes.
Because you had me sitting here thinking that's why I had such a big pause. I was like, what? Okay.
So maybe we don't ask keep it going till we get there. But we do want to know, where is it? What's on fire? So, you know, it's a very fast-paced sort of environment that I work in. which is fine when you're at work. And sort of everybody who's in that line of work recognizes and understands, you know, I need information now. I want an answer now. I need this to happen now, right? So
right.
You've become very used to this. Then you leave the office and you have to go home. And you have to try to break yourself out of this mindset of you get home and say, Mr. Anderson, what do you want for dinner? And there's this long gap, like minutes, hours to determine what do I want for dinner? You're not getting a response. They go, you can have chicken or you can have spaghetti. Chicken or spaghetti? Chicken or spaghetti? Come on, make a decision. What do you want, chicken or spaghetti? And it's not really welcomed by your spouse when you're rat-a-tatting these questions and expecting you're sitting there tapping your foot, wanting an answer. This is where I live in kind of a mindset, and I think that's where all my rules, you interpret as rules being, is that I need these parameters. My life is a collection of if-then statements.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to go out for breakfast this morning? If then, I need to know. If not, then I'm going to cook some pancakes. And I need to know this right away. Because I have things to do, right?
Right.
That's part of my problem, is that's just how I work. It's become ingrained into me.
But if that's your logic, and I don't want to go back into this because we beat it into the ground. When somebody texts or tweets you and then they become part of your timetable, how come you don't apply that same logic to other people? Why don't you immediately respond? Because as we said in the last show, you said, I do not subscribe to being on anybody else's timetable. Why do you expect everybody to be on your timetable then?
Well, when it comes to those types of communications, I set aside a time and to be able to deal with them. So
mm-hmm.
I might see a tweet come in, but if I'm driving, if I'm sweeping the floors or involved in some kind of a task, I will probably view your tweet or your message and say, oh yes, I need to answer that, but I will answer it when I'm finished this task, and then when I can sit down and deal with all of the little niggling, annoying tweets. I'll take some time and deal with all of them when I'm ready, after I've accomplished this other goal, because other goals are more important than responding to a tweet.
Right. I understand all that, but I'm saying, let's say if somebody texts you a question about, hey, do you two want to come over for dinner Saturday? It's up there in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't respond because maybe Mr. Anderson's not home, so you don't know, and so there's some things up in the air. So you don't answer right away, and eventually you do. Now, let's say you're that person who was trying to put together that dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
What would you feel if nobody responded to you for, like, 2 days later, and you're like, I have to go to Costco and get the chicken that I'm going to cook if they're going to come? I really don't have any hostility about this, but I'm just wondering, how do you not go, oh, if that was me, then I would want an answer right away?
Yeah, well, definitely that plays a factor in whether or not I respond to you, Brenda.
This was completely made up.
I understand that, and I try to factor the necessity for a speedy response when I see a message like that. So everything is elastic here. Like, some messages are more important than others.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
some will get my immediate attention and some will not. And just let me finish.
Sure.
If I was planning this party, I would hopefully consider that I'm going to have to give my guests time to respond. And I do a lot of communications in this way, where I try to get out my messages within a reasonable time, because I expect there's going to be some sort of delay. Or if I know I want an answer on something which will allow me to make a decision for my afternoon, I will try to send that request out much sooner than the final cutoff.
Well, how about, let's get away from the communication and let's just talk about these rules about things that go on in your house. Like, I could just tell that we don't go to bed without the dishes being done at night. Is that a rule?
Well, that would be a great rule. I wish that would happen.
Oh, that doesn't happen?
I often get up and look at the pile of dishes and curse.
Okay, well...
But here's what I'll do. This is my spoiled teenager way of dealing with it. Is I'll say...
I know what you're going to say. Can you tell me what time you might be getting those dishes done?
It's exactly what I would say. Or else I will angrily do them myself.
And you'll make sure to tell them that you did it. That's all right. I went ahead and did the dishes. So you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, we've talked about the fact that, you know, the dog cannot get people food. And that's a big rule. There's rules about the car. I always feel like whenever I get in any of your cars, like I might as well be just covered head to toe with mud, because the minute I sit down, I know I'm leaving my skin cells behind and fingerprints. And
that's terrible.
What?
That's terrible that you would feel that way. So, I mean, yes, I can understand how you could take on that feeling, but really it's my goal that you be relaxed and comfortable. I guess I don't really make that easy.
Well, I've just heard the way you talk about your troll of a husband. You call him that, not me. His little dirty feet.
Yes. Well, because I don't know. I don't have an excuse for that. You know.
Right. Oh, like when I was up there and it would be time to... You decided that we were leaving at 11. And say 10:30, you said, "All right, people. 11 o'clock, we're leaving. Get your tablets, get your drinks, get your dog ready." You know, it felt very, you know, structured. How do you react when people don't, like, if
a minute now, hang on a sec.
What? There,
you know, I am required to do this. If I didn't set limits for Mr. Anderson and hound him constantly to be, "Okay, we're leaving in 15 minutes, I could leave and he would still be 30 minutes behind schedule. I could probably go do whatever we were going to do and come back, and then he'd realize, "Well, yeah, were we supposed to go somewhere today?" So I have to be extremely proactive in making sure he has focus on the task.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, me being an adult who's used to, you know, saying if we're leaving at 11, I will have myself ready by 11. When you were doing this, it felt semi-directed towards me as well, so I guess I shouldn't have felt that way, but it felt like, okay, all you little idiots, we're moving now. Come on, let's get it together.
Well, you sure have to put up with a lot of hell to live with me, don't you?
Well, no.
Sounds terrible.
You're just a horrible human. No. I just sensed...
You're absolutely correct in all of these assessments, I have to admit. I am totally guilty. But that's the way it is around here. I need to have this structure. I'm extremely time aware because, you know, if we leave at 11:30, you know, we could have all kinds of issues. If we don't get out the door on time, we might hit traffic. Maybe we're trying to catch a ferry. There's all these things that go through my mind. Oh, if this doesn't happen on time, the hardship and toil we might encounter is unbearable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially going into the big city, you know. When you were here, occasionally we were going into Vancouver this is a factor that you deal with when you live in a city or near a city. You always have to consider how the rest of the city is going to screw up your day.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like a constant, it's like me against the world. It's us against them, I feel, a lot.
Mm-hmm. What if you really had a weekend day in your mind, You had all the laundry caught up, the house was clean. You didn't really have any goals. And what if you said, all right, Mr. Anderson, I'm going to let you direct everything we do today. What would that do to your brain?
Well, you know what would happen is nothing would happen.
Mm-hmm.
We would just, I don't know, watch movies and eat pancakes all day.
Don't forget about the grapes.
And the grapes, and not get anything done until the last minute. You know, Mr. Anderson is a very last-minute guy. He won't do anything until he's determined that this is the absolute last minute that I can start this project in order for it to be able to be finished by the delivery date. And I think he conducts his whole life in that regard where he works, because he has a fairly deadline-oriented job,
mm-hmm.
and he he doesn't start working on things until the absolute last minute, and that carries through with everything he does.
That might drive me a little crazy. But what would that do to your brain if you knew, if you had to give up control for that, just, you know, 8 hours, let's say?
I could do it if, as long as I didn't have any thing that needed to be done.
Right. So if you
if I wasn't responsible for anything for the next 8 hours, I might be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'd do with myself. I would probably find something that's way down low on my priorities to do, like knit Aunt Patty a cap.
You can knit?
No. Learn to knit Aunt Patty a cap.
I see.
I do know how to relax, though. I can relax.
Yeah. I relaxed on your couch, and then you made me leave. We should tell everybody. Did we talk about that on the recap of the vacation?
I'm not sure which incident you're talking about.
The incident where you guys were sitting down to watch World War Z, and it was getting to the end of the vacation, and I was kind of tired, and I laid down on your couch, and I was trying so desperate to stay awake, and the next thing I know, you're kind of touching my toe, and you're going, Brenda, go to bed.
Time to get up. Yep.
Yeah.
That was cute. I thought that was terrific that you were finally able to relax and zonk out.
I did zonk out. I zonked out up at the cabin and just snored my way all the way through Vancouver.
That's good. That's what a good vacation should have, lots of sleeping.
But I could tell, like, when we were sitting in there watching TV, you seemed comfortable. But in your mind, I think that it'd be hard for you to get up and just relax the whole day away.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can relax for short periods of time. If I'm actually on vacation, like somewhere away where I don't have to be responsible for everybody except for Mr. Anderson and his dog, I can chill out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were chilling out pretty good when we were up there, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point I could tell you're like, Brenda's getting bored, we need to have an activity. And then we started recording and doing the Game Night Guy show. But I wasn't bored. I was just sad because I lost my camera.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, I don't feel, you know, you're defending all this stuff in a perfectly rational way. Nobody would argue with it. But is there something underneath it that drives you, that makes you feel like I can't give away control? Like, I noticed, and I'm not dissing Mr. Anderson, but Mr. Anderson does very little to keep that household going.
True.
Well, how come it's like that? How did it become that way?
I don't know. I think when I first met Mr. Anderson, you know, he's a little bit like a frat boy, so he needs lots of care and attention. He's not a real good planner, and like, I'll ask him, what do you want to have for dinner tomorrow? That's an unfathomable question. He can't possibly get his brain into gear to think what he might be wanting to eat in a day.
That's hard for me too.
He usually answers that question with, "I'm not hungry right now."
Mm-hmm. That's how I answer. Eric and I do this too. What do you think you might want for supper? I don't know. I haven't had breakfast yet.
So here's Mr. 8-Day Planner going, rah, ripping my hair out because now I have to come up with some idea. When I first met Mr. Anderson, he worked and I wasn't working at the time because I moved from the small town and I came to Vancouver to join Mr. Anderson. So when we moved in together, I was the one who set up the house while he went to work. We had all our crap that all came in, and for the month or whatever, the first month we were together, I was unpacking and organizing our life, and I'd cook dinners, and it was like the perfect little fairy tale wedding, you know, the man goes to work, the woman stays home and looks after the house, and makes the meals. Perhaps I wrongfully established at that point that I was in charge of the house. If I asked him to do something, he would definitely do it. But then some things, I'd have to come back behind him and clean up after him, you know.
Right.
You're going to vacuum the house. Well, you didn't do it right because I'm a neat freak.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of happened out. That's the responsibility I've taken on. I probably did it to myself.
I think Eric and I definitely have more of a half-and-half situation going here based on who's ever in the mood to do it or who's tired. He definitely cooks more than I do.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I don't care to cook as much. If it's a novelty, like when we're up at the cabin and I felt, you know, like, oh, look what I'm doing, I'm cooking, that's fine. But day-to-day, it's like, ugh, whatever.
No, actually, I like cooking, but I understand.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel like we've gotten to know why. I guess, is it just about practicality? Is there no strong emotion underneath it? Because you know me, I think there's always some emotion underneath everything we do.
There's no emotion. What? Someone has to do the bloody laundry. And if I don't do it, it's not going to get done. I'm going to be, what am I going to wear today, he'll say. And I said, well, did you wash your shirts? No. Well, then you're responsible for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
These things just need to be done.
Right.
How can you not do them?
When Eric and I first got together, I felt like I needed to do the domestic stuff. And then there was a certain point where I just kind of went, you need your shirt ironed, you do it. I kind of put my hands up and said, you figure it out. I'm not going to be responsible for you. You're a grown-ass person. Nobody's ever done it for me. See, that's what it all is about me. Nobody's ever done it for me. Why do I have to do it for you?
I think maybe some of us are caretakers and some of us are freeloaders. And maybe Mr. Anderson and I have just found the perfect relationship.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I'm not saying I don't resent it sometimes. I get really pissed off when on my day off I have to vacuum this bloody dog's hair up and do the laundry and spend my whole day doing these bloody chores. Oh, it's so frustrating sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a part of the regular routine. I need to have that routine.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not doing that routine, I'll be doing some other one of my 8 million sub-routines that I go do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you're just happier than I am. You know, lately I've been starting to see myself through other people's eyes, and I've been listening to different shows that I never listened to, and my first impulse is to think, what are they so goddamn happy about? And then I think, wait, it's not them, Brenda, it's you. You're not happy.
Uh-huh.
So maybe you're not always evaluating stuff because you're content with where your life is at, and
or maybe it's like this, Brenda.
What?
Maybe I'm so busy doing bullshit chores that I have no time to consider how boring and sad my misguided life is. It just doesn't register.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there
I think there's something to this. You get tied up in the circle of what's going on in Brenda Boo's head.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always sort of self-evaluating. And everything somebody else does, someone unrelated to you does, sort of reflects back on you in a strange way.
Mm-hmm. They call that's another form of being a narcissist, is making everything personal. They say, I've heard people say stuff like, oh, well, you're sad because it suits your purpose and you get something out of it. And it's like, I don't know if that's necessarily true. Because when I'm happy, I'm very content to be happy. I'm not looking for something to make it bad. So I don't know. Do you think, now the small times that we've spent together, how do you think I fit into this category? I don't think I'm a freeloader.
No. You mean where do you sit on the scale between...
being motivated or not motivated or organized or...
I think you have a lot of energy. And I think you could accomplish a lot of things.
Yes.
But you lose...
focus.
Focus, yeah.
Yeah, my head's everywhere.
You're easily distracted by unrelated problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to talk about this on my little podcast, but I'll just say it briefly. Like today, both my clients ended up canceling for different reasons, and so I was like, I'm going to clean my own house. And it was all I could do not to just come in and get sidetracked by all these projects, you know. It's just like, Brenda, just clean. Don't be reorganizing these shelves and putting this over here and deciding you want to put this there. Just clean. And it's very hard for me just to walk into a room and not go, oh, that needs to be done, that needs to be done. And then so I stop mopping and I start doing this. So
I experience that too. If I don't ever really want to work, I always want to goof off a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what I would be doing all the time. But I force myself and say, like I was trying to do some editing today. And I said, okay, I'm going to spend a full 60 minutes on this and not do anything else other than this editing. And then after 60 minutes, if it's not done, then I'll stop and I'll go play or I'll go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that it's very difficult. Even it sounds easy, yeah, just work on this thing for 1 hour. It's really difficult to sit down and not be distracted by everything else that you want to do.
I know. When I do lots of sometimes, I'll sit down and I'll start editing, and I know that, because I want to do it in one sitting, and it's like, okay, I know I'm going to have to sit here and commit 3 hours of my life to this.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, about an hour and a half into it, you're like, oh, God, why am I doing this? But I just want to get it done, so I keep going.
The other thing that I find is I reward myself. So if I do all my mundane chores,
mm-hmm.
This is why I'm always doing my chores, because I won't allow myself to have any fun until after my to-do list has been all scratched off. That's why I'm so task-oriented, because I want to get this bullshit done so that I can play.
Mm-hmm. And your idea of playing is with your cars?
Yeah, or going out, having breakfast with somebody, or
mm-hmm.
fiddle farting around, or just even watching some trashy TV.
Mm-hmm. So to tie this into our last episode, how do you feel that being so task-oriented is counterproductive or counterintuitive to having relationships?
Because relationships are a task. They're yet another task to take on and take responsibility for.
I'll say this, and I don't think I've ever said it to you, and I'll admit it, and I hope it doesn't make anybody uncomfortable, but there was a point when I first met you at Pride 48, and you were going to be leaving very early in the morning, and we were saying goodbye, and Eric was walking up ahead in the casino, and I was very reluctant to leave because I thought, oh, I'm never going to see him again. I really thought we connected, and you had said something like, you know, well, do you remember what you said? I'm sure you don't.
No.
No. He said something like, well, he told me not to cry, and then he said something like, from now on, we're going, you know, even if we don't see each other for 6 months or a year, from now on, you know, you're going to be in my life or something like that. And I was like, I believed you. And at times this last year, I thought, I wonder if that Faye driver ever just dreads ever saying to Music Mark, I want to meet Brenda Bill.
Don't be silly. Of course not. Well, but, you know, I mean, friendships, they ebb and flow, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you got frustrated with me, and maybe I got frustrated with you. I don't know if I'd say it that way, but it's all a part of having a relationship, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think...
You can't love each other all the time.
Right. I think the people that are willing to put up with the fact that we're all human and sometimes we want something and it's at an inconvenient time, like somebody's about ready to get married and things like that.
You don't regret, I mean, do you feel like was there ever a time where you thought, oh, what he said, he didn't really mean, we're not going to be friends for the rest of our lives?
Like I said, I've been feeling more confident lately, but prior to lately, yeah, I worry because sometimes I say things just to be nice because I don't want to disappoint somebody. And I think if I feel like you and I are similar, then I think, oh, maybe I'm the person he's just being nice to. But then I remember Faye is not that nice.
Right. I wouldn't waste my time on you.
Right. Right, then, because I can...
Because I'm happy to say, fire off.
Yes. But no, I never regretted meeting you. I regret that you live so far away. That's all.
Okay, well, Brenda, we have kind of talked this one to death. So, if you're in agreement, why don't we move on to a new topic?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, here's a new segment for everybody. What are you looking through the keyhole?
One person's craziness is another person's reality.
Hey, come out from under that table.
Look at it from my point of view.
Just step back and take a look from my perspective.
Humans see what they want to see.
Just step back and take another look.
It's all in the mind.
Listen here, Missy.
Take a look through my kaleidoscope.
A look through my kaleidoscope.
Okay, so... should we explain what kaleidoscope means to people?
Yeah, I think the whole point of Through My Kaleidoscope is we want to be able to share our both yours and my perspective on a single topic. So we might hear something that you did, and then I'm going to counteract your point, possibly, or possibly agree, and show you how I would feel looking at it from my perspective. So... the kaleidoscope kind of refers to how we might see things differently. Everyone sees something a little different when they look through a kaleidoscope. And that's what we're going to talk about right now.
Right, because one thing that our podcast offers that some others might not is that just the combination of us. You know, you're a gay man, I'm a straight woman, we're friends, and we're obviously going to see life differently. This is what I would like to start exploring more in our podcast. And tonight's scenario is something that actually happened to me. Sometimes I think they're going to just be...
hypothetical?
Thank you. Hypothetical is a hard word. But this one actually did happen. So let's, Faye, come back with me to 1984.
Okay. Sure. Let me see. Where was I? Okay, I know where I was.
Where were you?
I was graduating high school.
Graduating high school. I'd been out of high school for a couple of years, and I was in college.
The Faye driver was driving around in a 1965 Pontiac Acadian.
What color was it? Do you remember?
It was, yeah, absolutely. It was white, and her name was Bessa, and she had a three in the tree.
Ooh.
And a stereo that would come on whenever it felt like it.
Well, that's old school.
It wasn't even a stereo. It was an old AM radio.
I remember cars that just had AM, thinking it was pretty fancy to have FM radio.
Oh, yeah, that was, oh, that would have been a pretty fancy thing. But anyway, so it's 1985, Brenda, and what's happening for you?
Well, I am living with who I thought was my ideal boyfriend. He had dark hair. His name was Jim. He was about five.
Jim Butler?
Well, no, Jim Butler.
Okay, so carry on.
Jim Butler's long since dead.
Oh, of course.
This Jim didn't own a mule, as far as I'm, as I remember. But this Jim, I had met in a kind of a weird way. I'd been sick, and he was coming over during the day because he had known my roommate, and he was dropping off a CD or not. No, they didn't have CDs back then. It was a cassette tape. They had become friends, and I had been lounging around, not going to class. And he said I looked like I had bedroom eyes because I'd been laying around coughing and wheezing and shit. I'm like, whatever. Anyway, that's how we met. I thought he was very sexy. I was very much under his thumb. And eventually we moved in together. One point, I guess it had to have been towards the end of the relationship, really. He had never had a car. He always had used my car, my little Horizon that I had. So I'd take him to work. I'd have to get up at 2:30 in the morning in the winter and go pick his ass up all the time, and he'd keep me sitting outside, and I'd wait and wait, and he just really used and abused me.
You mean like pick him up from the bar? Is that what you mean?
No, from work, but they had a bar, so they're open later. Anyway, so one night he says a bunch of the girls, because he worked with all kinds of girls at this restaurant, they were going to have a get-together, and he says he wanted to go, and I said, don't go. Just stay here with me, because I always felt like they were flirting with him and everything. And he says, okay. Well, about an hour later, he says, well, I'm going to go to the grocery store. I said, okay. So he's going out quite a ways away. There's Iowa City, and then there's Coralville. He was going out to this Coralville grocery store. And I said, okay, see you in a little while. Well, you know, like an hour and a half passes, and he doesn't come home.
I wonder where he could be.
Well, yes. I mean, he's in my car. He could have been in a car accident, right?
Oh, right.
Well, it turns out he ended up going to this party, and he didn't call me or let me know. And I'm going to let you know how I found out eventually where he went. But I would like to know how you would have felt if your boyfriend, who's is in your car, says he's just going to the grocery store, and then hours pass, and he doesn't come home, and doesn't let you know. How would that make you feel?
Well, I'd probably be pissed off that he was off in my car, and I might be worried for the first little bit. But then, did you not think deep in your heart that he might have gone to that party? How long did it take you to clue in that he may not be at the grocery store?
You know, Faye, I think, yeah, if I was honest with myself, I thought that's where he went. But I'm the sort of person that if I can't imagine myself doing it, it's hard for me to grasp that other people do it. So now take off 30 years of experience.
Okay, now just wait just a minute.
Yeah.
Let me finish my what I would think.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell you, but I'm just saying that's what I was thinking. To answer your question, if you take off 30 years of my life and I'm in my early 20s, I can't imagine that somebody would be that rude to me. Go ahead, though.
Yeah, I think if it was me, I'd be pissed off that he was gone so long. I might have worried, but more likely I would have said to him, how am I supposed to know where you are? You could have been in an accident. But I don't think I'd ever believe that he was ever in an accident.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to think that I would surmise after the first hour or hour and a half that he was probably gone to the party, and I might try to phone the party house if I think I knew where it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be pissed off. There's no doubt about it that I would be pissed off that he was disappeared for an hour and a half or however long he was gone.
Now, he wasn't gone for an hour and a half. That's just when I kind of took it to the next level. He probably would have just been gone for, you know, maybe another hour beyond that. Would you have done anything? Would you have just stayed at home and just waited for him to come home and gone to sleep or something?
This is what I would have done. I'm going to assume that after an hour and a half, I figured out that he's not at the grocery store, that he's probably gone to the party. And then I'll be pissed off at him for going to the party, one, without me, two, for going because I said I didn't want to go, and three, for going using my car to go to a party. I'd be pissed off because I didn't know where he was, and there might be a slight chance I was worried about him being in an accident. But I think after the first hour and a half, I'd go, yeah, he's at the party. And then I would go to bed and ignore him and pretend to sleep or whatever and just be a bitch the next day.
Well, would you like to know what I did, Faye?
I'm dying to know, yes.
Okay, now please give me just a little bit of leeway here.
All right, you're 24 years old.
Not even, 22.
Okay.
No, I would have been like 20. In about 84, I've been like 21. 22. Okay.
Go ahead. Tell us what your 21-year-old self did.
So, I really loved him. I mean, he said some vicious things to me over the year and a half we were together, and I wanted to please him so bad. He hated the fact that I smoked, because I smoked back then, and I would go through these big, elaborate things to hide the fact that I was sneaking smoking. I would take showers. I'd have one cigarette, I'd take a shower, and I mean, it was just a pretty fucked up dysfunctional relationship, but I wanted it to work so badly. So he didn't come home, and I knew he was going to this grocery store, so I actually called and had them page him a few times.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. At the grocery store, and nobody showed up. Yeah, I did figure out that he went to this party. I kind of figured where it was because they had this one house where they all kind of ended up gravitating towards. So he had the only vehicle. So this is about 1 o'clock in the morning or something, and I got on my bike.
Oh.
And I rode to this house.
Awesome. I think I know what's coming. This is maybe what I would do.
Oh, my God. So then I remember it so clearly. I walked upstairs because it was an old farmhouse. You know, college students had rented. I went up this long, steep staircase, got to the door, and sure enough, there he was. And there's all these girls, maybe one or two guys, but it was all this wait staff that was there. And I was like, oh, I can't remember exactly, but basically, you know, I called him over and it's like, come, what are you doing? Come home. And he's like, I'll be home in a while. And he was so dismissive of me. He just acted like I had done something wrong and kind of started ignoring me. And then I remember this one girl in particular who I always thought was so flirty with him. She was kind of over by the stairwell, and I got so upset, and I went to go out, and I even kind of pushed her aside, and I went downstairs, and dumbass me didn't even take my own fucking car. I rode my bike home.
Yeah, that's what I would have done. I would have rode my bike over there and stolen my car back.
Oh, I wish I would have.
He'd been sorry when he stepped out of that party.
Yeah, not even left him the bike.
I probably would have hidden the car, too, and then he'd think it was stolen, and I'd go home and pretend I was asleep the whole time. That's what I'd do.
Oh, that would have been so much better.
That's the kind of vicious revenge I would have gotten.
That's better than what I did. I just played the victim and just took it, and when he did get home, then he was mad at me. You know, you had to have known I was going to the party when I didn't come home. Why didn't you call me? I don't know. And then he's like, I can understand if you were upset because I was out in your car. But that was the only reason he would give me. Mm-hmm. And one other time he went over to another girl he worked with there. And he said he says, oh, she's broken up with her boyfriend. She wants to talk. So he was gone for a long time. I called and said, are you coming home? And he's like, yeah, I'm coming home pretty soon. So then when he finally came home, I said, like, well, what's the deal? Why didn't you come home earlier? And he says, oh, well, she took my keys and wouldn't give them back to me. So I couldn't leave. I think in hindsight, I think this guy might have been gay anyway.
Oh.
Because he had checked out a book from the University of Iowa, the university we went to. It was a big textbook about how do you know if you're gay or not or something like that. And I found a couple of gay porno magazines.
Oh. Mm.
So I know he ended up marrying somebody. I don't know if it lasted or whatnot.
Well, clearly it seems like this guy was the classic manipulator.
He was.
He would blame you for things that he did.
Mm-hmm. He would say the creepiest things to me, and I would just take it. Mm. Young girls will just take so much shit from men.
Right.
I don't understand.
Just the desire to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
To be loved and accepted. That's what we all want.
I want to ask you this. How do you think about the way I behaved?
I think it's perfectly logical. In fact, I was expecting something much more psycho, like, or not psycho, but I wouldn't be surprised if you were more volatile in your response to this. I think you were pretty cool.
Mm. I just cried a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, I mean, obviously he had too much power over you.
Mm-hmm. He did. Have you ever been in a traditional 1960s circa Volkswagen Bug
mm-hmm.
in the winter?
Yes.
What makes the old-fashioned Bug not the best car to drive in the winter?
It has no heat.
It has no heat.
The heat comes from the back end. It's air-cooled only, and usually the windows are all fogged up.
Mm-hmm.
Cold as a witch's tit.
So that's when he ended up getting a car. He got this orange VW, and when he got that car, I knew it was just a matter of time that he was before he'd break up with me, which he did. But before he did, we drove, let's say, 200 miles in the middle of an Iowa winter in that VW Bug to see his family. It was so awful. I've never been so cold in all my life. Oh, my God. Should we go to our next segment?
Well, I was going to say, speaking of parties that go wrong, I think we should move on and let's have a peek in the psych ward.
Okay. Come, take a peek into the psych ward. All right, Faye. This is your psych ward. Right now, I'm visiting.
All right, come on in. Put on a coat. Put on your white coat.
Do I have to leave all my pointed objects at the nurse's station?
All sharp objects. Please leave your shoelaces behind and any ties or belts.
All right.
So, come along with me. Let's explore this issue.
Okay.
I want to know how you respond to, say you have to go to a party or you have to go somewhere where you're meeting a whole bunch of new people or people you may not know. What is your response when you walk into that room with all those people? And maybe you're with your husband. Let's pick a scenario such as the business Christmas party, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So there you're with your husband, you're the tag-along because it's not your work, it's his work, and there's a whole bunch of people. Of course, everyone is dressed nice, and you have to walk through the door. Maybe there's a receiving line, you have to shake the boss's hand and meet a bunch of, who knows, vice presidents, managers, whatever. And then there you are confronted with a room full of people. What is your response to this?
Well, I've had to do this sort of thing, you know, with Eric's job. We do have this yearly Christmas party, which I always try to avoid, but I don't always get out of it. Normally, what I do is I'll smile. Hi, how are you? Oh, yeah. You know, just go through the basic pleasantries. And then I'll just, if Eric's talking, I'll either just stand there and let everybody else talk and just look around. Or if there's tables where we're going to sit down for a meal, I'll say, I'm going to go sit down So then I'll plan my ass away and just kind of sit there by myself until everybody else gets done talking. I do that a lot.
And then, so what's going through your mind? What are you thinking in your head while you're being forced to endure these conversations where you're not saying anything, or when you're sitting by yourself in the corner of the room? What's playing out inside?
I'm either thinking about that I don't like the clothes that I have on because I don't have any dress-up clothes, so that'll be part of the thing. I'm like, ugh, everybody else is dressed so much nicer than I am. Or I think I could be home doing any manner of things that's more appealing. Or now that I have a smartphone, I'll sit there and I'll look at Twitter a lot. I've even gone so far as to pull up a game and start playing it. Mm-hmm. I just tune everybody out as much as possible. And then as the evening goes on, as more things that are said, if it's like a business situation where somebody's doing a speech, my eyes start rolling into the back of my head, or I just stare off into space and think about anything else.
So for the whole duration of the whole event, you're basically avoiding and hiding and trying to make yourself as small as possible. Is that
yes.
Size of it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Can I tell you my perspective on this?
I would like to hear it, yes.
I feel many of the same things as you indicate. There's a general sense of fear at the beginning. You have to meet all these people. You're unsure about, or I'll speak for myself, I'm unsure about my looks, my attire, my dress. I'm nervous to be meeting people, and I'm thinking, what are they going to think of me? Another aspect of this for me is that me and Mr. Anderson are a gay couple, so we're probably the only gay couple in the room, especially if it's a work event. So that adds an added level of sort of heightened awareness and the fear of being scrutinized by everybody, because you kind of get the sense that everyone is whispering, oh, there's the gay guys. Here come the gay guys. Look at them. Let's watch them. And so that causes some trepidation as well. Like you, I sort of want to shrink away, or when I enter into a room, I like to look at everybody and look for an ally, find somebody that I can latch on to, or someone who looks friendly or inviting.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, this only lasts a very short time, because usually after the first 5 or 10 minutes, when I've assessed the lay of the land and when I've found some interesting people, then I turn into Mr. Social, where I chat up people, try to introduce myself, I look for the cute people and try to gravitate toward the good-looking people or anybody that I think might be gay or wish they were gay. And so I do get quite nervous, but it's kind of for a short time, and then I start to enjoy myself, actually. And then this could also be egged on by generous amounts of liquor as well, so... That's my thing. But I understand the fear, and I experience the fear at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. I always feel like, you know, you said that you feel like people are staring at you because you think people are going, oh, look at this, the gay couple. Well, if they know Mr. Anderson's gay and then they see you, chances are pretty, I would think most people would just be accepting, and I bet they're not whispering about you.
You're probably right, but there still is a sense, and I don't agree, because I don't think people automatically assume that you're gay or that Mr. Anderson might be gay.
No, I didn't mean assume it. I meant that they knew it. If you're going to a work function, that people know him and know. I didn't mean that they would assume that they already know that. That's what I meant. I didn't mean to say, like, yeah, it was obvious or something. Like,
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, and you're right for small events, but sometimes they have these huge events where people are coming from a bunch of different offices, so not everybody actually knows everyone. There is a bit of uncertainty there. But you're right, I don't really think that everyone's whispering and stuff like that, but I think it crosses people's minds.
I can see where that would be very uncomfortable. No, I was just saying, I always feel like, even though my body and my age says that I'm a grown person, I always feel like the little kid that snuck into the grown-up section. And because a lot of times the things that they're talking about just bore the crap out of me. And I don't care to pipe in or have no motivation. And it all just bores me to death. So I don't really want to fit in a lot of times.
By the end of it, I'm going, woohoo, let's find a table to dance on, everybody.
Really? That's what you're doing. Well, I've seen you at Pride 48, and you were very outgoing and gregarious, but that's a different scenario.
The first initial walking into that room with all those people, there is always a sense of horror, which is soon quickly overshadowed by love and acceptance, but mm-hmm. What are you going to do?
Yeah. So what is it about this part of your kaleidoscope that, is there anything else you wanted to discuss about that? Were you just curious how I felt?
I just wanted to see, am I the only freakazoid who doesn't like these sorts of situations where you have to put yourself, where you're putting yourself out there, right?
I don't like it. I mean, I've been in situations like where around my family, especially because I have a big extended family on my mom's side. And there's been situations where I'd be standing there talking to somebody or walk up to somebody and then they just kind of walk away and leave me standing there. And I always feel like sometimes I have this pheromone on me that repels people. I don't know. There's just a lot I don't trust about the human race. So that's a lot of it, too. I don't want to put myself out there to be rejected. And then when I'm comfortable, I always invariably go too far, and then people look at me like I'm a freak.
Right.
And there's no alcohol involved.
Yeah, right.
Well, I can't imagine if I saw you at a party, I bet, and we didn't know each other, I'd say I would be the last person you'd come over and belly up to.
I don't know. Who's to know?
Yeah.
You mean just based on appearances?
Yeah, like I'd be sitting there by myself, and I bet, you know, like if, because Eric's very gregarious, outgoing, and he talks to everybody, you know, when we've hosted bus trips before, you know, he'd be like, I got to go mingle, and I would just sit there. You know, every once in a while, there'll be someone that will walk up, and like, you can tell they're doing some kind of like, look at this child. Poor child sitting here by herself. I better talk to her.
Yeah, I kind of think that I might be that person, though.
Yeah.
Coming up to talk to the lonely, sad-looking person in the corner.
Little girl with your Diet Coke and your phone, what are you doing? Nothing.
Sometimes they turn out to be the most interesting people.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me, today I was telling Eric, I was finishing up my job. This is a little bit different, but it's small talk. And my client says, well, looks like we're going to be losing some of this nice weather. And I said to Eric, I said, when people talk to you like this, do you ever just want to punch them in the throat and tell them to shut up? I don't want to talk about the weather. Please shut up about the weather.
Why are you so resistant to social normatives? I mean, this is a person's attempt. They have nothing to say. They probably don't want to talk to you either, but they have nothing to say. And it's normal to talk about the weather or when you know someone so casually, the only thing you have in common is the weather until you get to know the person.
Mm-hmm.
It's an attempt. It's a handshake. It's the offering of an olive branch to you.
Right.
To say, I don't know you, but what do you think? What's your reaction to the weather? Are you with me or against me?
This is the deal, Faye. Can I tell you?
tell me all about it, Brenda.
In the Midwest, this is an ongoing, nonstop conversation about the weather. And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of these Midwest attitudes. I'm tired of everything about where I live. So when I see evidence of it, I'm just like, oh, just shut up, old woman. I'm tired of it.
I don't think, I disagree. I don't think it's an exclusively Midwestern concept. So everyone in the world talks about the weather when they have nothing else to talk about. Speaking of the weather, you know what the weather is in Tenopa today? I'll tell you.
Yeah.
It's 55 degrees and cloudy.
Partly cloudy.
I'm sorry, partly cloudy.
Do you think we might be getting rain here in the desert?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it always looks like it, but we're always disappointed. So I'm going to say no this time.
Okay. If people would like to talk to us about these two new segments, well, how could they do that, Faye?
Well, you can call us on our telephone line, which is 319-535-0266. That's 319-535-0BOO.
Mm-hmm. But they can write us at our Gmail account. There's so many cobwebs, I need to get my Swiffer to it. But it is feyandbrenda@gmail.com. feyandbrenda@gmail.com. Please, go ahead, use it. It's there.
It's there for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Faye, let's say goodbye to everybody.
Well, goodbye, everyone. Thanks for joining us on Drive Time Tenopa, and come back next time for more peeks into the psych ward and another look through my kaleidoscope.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.